On the unsuspecting morning of April 16th of 2014, 476 passengers upon the Seiwo ferry going to Jeju Island seemed to be a very unsuspecting field trip for its 325 students aboard. Unfortunately, in those bright early morning hours, the boat started to sink, killing many of its passengers on board. Why this accident happened and who is responsible for it is what we are here to find out today. Today's episode is of the Seiwo South Korean ferry accident. I would like to begin today's podcast by reminding everybody that a lot of these names are in Korean, and unfortunately, I do not speak it fluently or at all, so I'm very sorry about my pronunciation of certain names, places, and companies. However, I would like to start off this segment by saying that I mean no disrespect to the family or anybody involved for anything that I am about to read, and this is purely for educational purposes. I'd also like to start off this part with telling you a history about the ferry itself, the Seiwo. The ferry itself was bought by the company Jung-Hae-Jin Marine in 2012 from a Japanese company, A-Line Ferry. At the time the ferry was purchased, the boat was 18 years old, running from the years 1994 to 2012 as a cargo ship. By the time it was purchased, the boat was in very bad condition and underwent modifications from October 12th of 2012 and February 12th of 2013. These modifications were later found to be illegal, pretty much being an entire redesign of the ship. These modifications led to two more floors being added to the ship to have more passenger room and ship cargo carrying space. These modifications unfortunately shifted the boat's center of gravity by a foot and 8 inches, and also gave the ship a left-right imbalance. These modifications were complete, and the ship underwent inspection by the Korean Register of Shipping and passed all inspections. The carrier, however, decreased the amount of cargo the ship could carry and increased the amount of basalt needed to keep the boat stable. The board audit of inspection later revealed that the KR's licensing was found to be falsified documents. However, the ship still began operation on March 15th of 2013. Before I enter into the next segment, which is going to be talking about the day of the accident, the rescue procedures later taken the same day, I would like to warn you that this has many descriptions of death of minors and death of many people on board. And if that is not something you wish to hear, it has a lot of disturbing facts about how some of the students responded to the accident, some of the responses from the parents of the accident, and some of the text messages and phone calls from the students on board. And if that is not something you would like to hear, then I will kindly ask you to maybe watch another episode, I promise. We could do something better next week if that's not anything you can handle. Talking more about the day of the accident, this next segment talks about when they first entered the Mangeol Channel of their trip, which this whole part of the accident takes place from 7:30 in the morning to 8:56 in the morning. Passengers and crew aboard the ship on the morning of April 16th. This is when everything starts happening. On April 16th at 7:30 in the morning, Korean Standard Time, Third Mate Park Hon-kyul and Helmsman Cho Jun-ki took over watch from the previous team that had just went to go rest. At the time, the Seiwo was heading on course of about 165 degrees at a speed of 20 knots, which if you're not someone who sails, is 23 miles per hour. Around 8:20 a.m. is when the ship was about 2 or 3 miles from entering the Mangeol Channel. Park ordered Cho to change the steering system from autopilot to manual steering. When the Seiwo arrived at the channel at 8:27 a.m. at a course of around 137 degrees, the wind speed was between 4 to 7 meters per second, which was about 13 to 23 feet per second. The wave height was about 1 foot and 8 inches, and visibility was pretty good. So at this time, from 7:30 to about 8:20 in the morning, things were going pretty good. And these were sailors. Like I said, third mate Park Hon-kyul. You got to remember these because it's going to refer to them by first name. And helmsman Cho Jun-ki were experienced in this channel. Because later on, a lot of people tried to say that this accident happened because the people left in charge were not experienced. However, that's not true. Park and Cho were very experienced with the Mango channel. Visibility was pretty good. It was also reported to be the tiniest bit foggy. And at this time, students were getting up to eat their breakfast. To remind you who was on board at this point. There are 476 passengers aboard. 325 of that 476 are second year high school students from Danwon High School. And I'll get into the casualty numbers later. But at this time, there are 325 students on board between the ages of 15 to 16. So remember that when we're talking about the people on board. The Mango channel was strong, had a strong underwater current, which did kind of start to cause some extreme conditions when steering the ship through. At the time of the incident, conditions were calm and the ship was following route. That was very frequently used. While the wider areas of the channel contained rocky hazards and shallow waters, they were not in the immediate vicinity of the ship's usual path. As the ship approached the fatal turn, breakfast was being served in the cafeteria. CCTV data showed at 8:40 a.m., students were starting to socialize on the deck. One surviving passenger, Choi Ian-sien, I believe, I'm sorry for mispronunciation, recalled having gone to the deck to smoke right before the incident. In this incident, it was also claimed by one of the surviving students, a second-year girl who had managed to make it out of the accident, stated that they noticed in the morning some of the tables were off-center and that their breakfast was starting to go, have a bit of a tilt to it. And at the time, the students, her and her friends, were laughing about it and making fun, not knowing what was going to happen very shortly later. This next part happens around the time of 8:48 in the morning, same morning. Right before the incident, Park and Cho were standing side by side near the ship's wheel at the bridge. Captain Lee was absent from the bridge at the time. Captain Lee is who was driving the ship on this day. Like I said earlier, Captain Shin was the one who was the typical captain of the Sewol. Unfortunately, I think due to the fact that he had been reporting issues and threatening to be fired over said issues, may have been why he wasn't there on this day. But I feel, I want to keep personal matters out of this, but personally I feel if Captain Lee was on the ship, things might have actually gone a little bit better. But Captain Lee was absent at the bridge at this time. At 8:46 a.m., the Sewol was traveling at a speed of 18 knots, or 21 miles per hour, at a course of around 136 degrees. Park ordered Cho to change the course from 135 degrees to 140 degrees, which Cho consequently undertook. There are conflicting accounts of what happened next. According to Park's testimony, after she used the radar to check the Sewol's course was changed and the current course was set to 140 degrees, she ordered Cho to change the course of the ship further to 145 degrees. This order was given at about 8:48 a.m. After realizing the ship was heavily listing starboard, which was already starting to tilt, which led the bow to turn to the right. She then gave the order to turn the wheel to port. Immediately after giving the order, she heard Cho exclaim, "The wheel isn't working," in a frustrated voice, after which the ship started listing. Listing is when the ship starts to tilt and turn. Cho's testimony did not notably differ from Park's, which is goes to say that this is probably an accurate account of what's going on. According to Cho, he only received the order to change the course from 140 degrees and not the order to change the course to 145 degrees. Because the Sewol kept turning towards the right, even though he was holding on to the wheel. He made two turns to the left, amounting to the 5-degree turn, so he was trying to turn in the opposite direction to keep the ship from listing. But because the ship did not stop turning rightward, it was eventually facing 145 degrees. Cho testified that Park gave an order to turn the ship in the opposite direction at this point, which he followed by turning the ship further to the left by 10 degrees. So, and the total number of turn became 15 degrees to the left. The court came to the conclusion that Cho's steering led to the ship's attempt a 15-degree turn for 40 seconds. The court concluded that Cho, who was flustered by the ship turning faster than expected when he was following Park's orders to turn the ship to the 145 degrees, was attempting to turn left when he took Park's order. This led him to make a turn to the right, causing the front of the ship to rapidly turn right. So during this, since they switched it from autopilot, stated earlier, to doing it manually to help shift through the underwater currents, they kept trying to turn the ship to certain degrees, even though one claims that the 145 was not in order. Either way, the ship started listing, and they made a quick 15-degree turn to the left to combat this, but the ship was turning faster than expected due to the fact that it was reported on April 1st of 2014 by Captain Shin that the steering was not working. So it's totally plausible that halfway through this, the ship turned too fast and the steering gave out. At this point, the ship is starting to list and is starting to capsize, which is a little bit different than just sinking. It was starting to completely turn over, which, if you remember, there were two more floors added to the top of the ship during modifications, meaning that the ship's very top heavy, which is going to make this process go very fast. And in the next segment, we'll talk about what happens after this. The next segment happens anywhere from between 8:52 in the morning to 9:30 in the morning. This is when calls for rescue start coming. As the ship begins sinking, the ferry's intercom system started ordering passengers to stay put, alleging that movement was dangerous and would have caused the ship to capsize faster. The announcements were made by the communication officer, Kyung Hae-seong, who had not consulted the manual before making the broadcast. The announcements began broadcasting by at least 8:52 in the morning and continued even when the water began flooding into the passenger compartments. The passengers were still being told to stay still and apply and put on their life jackets. Other crew members corroborated this order, instructing passengers to stay put. Captain Lee also instructed passengers to stay put and did not change the order, even as he himself had left the ship. The first emergency call was made by Cho Deok-han, a Danwon High School student aboard the ferry. At 8:52 a.m., he called the National Emergency Service number and reported to the Jeollanam-do Fire Station that the ship was beginning to capsize. Choi was connected to the Mokpo Coast Guard at 8:54 a.m. and was asked to give the latitude and longitude of the ship's location, so to give him a rough estimate of where the ship was located out at sea. 3 minutes later, the Mokpo Coast Guard station ordered patrol vessel number 123 to be dispatched to the scene. The vessel was launched at 8:58 a.m. following the Coast Guard search and a rescue manual. The boat was to be in charge of surveying the area and swiftly rescue passengers. Choi did not survive the capsizing, however, and was later found dead, unfortunately. At 8:55 a.m., the Sewol's crew made the first distress call to the Jeju VTS and asked them to notify the KCG, or the Korean Coast Guard, as the ferry was rolling and in danger. At 8:56, the Jeju VTS called the Jeju Coast Guard. 3 minutes later, the Jeju Coast Guard called the Mokpo Coast Guard and discovered that a patrol boat had already been dispatched. At 9:01 a.m., a crew member on the Sewol called the Incheon branch of Cheonghaejin, which is the company that owns the boat, to report the situation in Cheonghaejin's head office located in Jeju, then called Captain Lee at 9:03 to pretty much confirm with the captain what was going on. For a report of the situation, but at this time, Captain Lee was the first one to leave the ship as the boat was capsizing. Let that sink in for a minute. The captain telling people to not evacuate the boat as it is capsizing, yet being the first one to leave. But I digress for now. Where was I? The Incheon branch then talked with the first mate in 5 telephone calls over the next 30 minutes, 35 minutes actually. At 9:06 a.m., the Jindo VTS were informed of the capsizing incident by the Mokpo Coast Guard. Around this time, the Sewol's crew began communicating with the Jindo VTS, which was closer to their location. For the next 2 minutes, Jindo VTS alerted 2 other ships that the Sewol was sinking, with one confirming that it had visual contact with the ship. So there's a lot of back and forth, confirming location, confirming who's out on the scene. So there's a lot of back and forth going between different Coast Guards on what to do in the situation, which unfortunately is taking up a lot of precious time, which made rescue efforts so much longer. And we'll get to that in a little bit. At 9:07 a.m., the ferry's crew confirmed that the ship was capsizing and requested help from the KCG. At 9:14, the crew stated that the ship's angle of heel made evacuation impossible. Around this time, the captain of patrol vessel number 123 was appointed the commander of the scene. 4 minutes afterwards, the crew of the Sewol reported to the VTS that the ferry was heeled more than 50 degrees to port, which is pretty much on its side, starting to go on its side at this point. At 9:23 a.m., the VTS ordered the crew to inform passengers to wear life jackets. When the crew replied that the broadcasting equipment was out of order due to water rushing into the ship, the VTS told them to personally order passengers to wear life jacket and more clothing. At 9:25 a.m., the VTS asked Captain Lee to decide quickly whether to evacuate the ship, stating that they did not have enough information to make the decision. When Captain Lee inquired about the rescue, the VTS replied that patrol boats were due to arrive in 10 minutes. Remind you that this is about 9:30 in the morning, and the first call was made at 8:52 in the morning. And you have to think, at 8:52 to 9:30, the ship's already at a 50-degree angle. This is capsizing very, very fast. Incredibly fast, actually. This is what made the situation so dangerous. And you have to think, about 3/4 of these passengers are children, which makes this more terrifying in the sense. The patrol boats were due to arrive in about 10 minutes, and a helicopter in 1 minute. Lee then replied that there were too many passengers for the helicopter. During this time, Lee told passengers to still stay in their cabins, and the communications officer using the ship's intercom, repeatedly ordered passengers not to move. At 9:33 a.m., after confirming that nearby ships had volunteered to help in the rescue operations, the VTS told all ships to drop lifeboats for the passengers escaping. At 9:38, all communications were cut between the VTS and the Sewol. About 3 minutes after all communications were cut, about 150 to 160 passengers and crew had jumped overboard. The Sewol took 2.5 hours to sink. By around 11:18 a.m., the stern was submerged, with the section of the hull about 2 meters high and 20 to 30 meters long showing above the water. At noon on April 16th, about 50 centimeters of the bulbous bow was above water, and at 1:03, the ship was completely submerged in water. This did not take long at all. The most frustrating part of this, and I get frustrated reading about it, because I want to share stories like these, because it's important to understand situations like this and why they should never happen again. The biggest mistake happening here is that passengers were told to stay aboard and stay put because they were told that moving too much would cause the boat to capsize faster, and they were told that rescuers were coming. Later, come to find out that most of the passengers that were saved by nearby fishing boats 40 minutes before the Korean Coast Guard showed up to save passengers. At that point, most people would have already been dead. This next segment is talking about the people that were on board the ship at the time. Out of the 476 passengers, 325 of them were students. 304 died in this disaster, including 250 high school students. Of the approximately 172 saved, only 75 of them were students. More than half were rescued by fishing boats and other commercial vessels that arrived at the scene approximately 40 minutes before the Korean Coast Guard. I'm kind of veering a little bit off script the further I get into this, because I don't want to make light of the situation. I want to remind people that stuff like this happens and stuff like this is real and stuff like this should never happen again. I want to remind people that these are not just numbers. It's easy to hear large number of casualties on the news or during an incident, but it's different when you realize that these are real people. And I'll bring light of that to the end. Again, 250 children died on this ship. And only 75 of them were able to live and escape the accident. I believe to this day, five people aboard are still missing, considered missing, because their bodies were never recovered. And it took 40 minutes for the government's response team showed up to rescue passengers. And to remind you that all of the people that survived, that made it out of this accident, were people that did not listen to the announcements and jump ship before it completely capsized. During the ship's capsizing, members of the crew drank and communicated by telephone with staff from the Cheonghaejin about 7 different times. As passengers stayed in their cabins as instructed, Captain Lee and his crew abandoned the ship. Lee, Cho, and the first and second mates were the first people to be rescued. Captain Lee was rescued about 9:46 a.m. The ship capsized. Some passengers followed the announcements to stay put, even as water came into the cabins. Most of the student passengers obeyed the announcements. Some passengers who disobeyed the announcements climbed to the top of the ship or jumped into the water and were rescued. Videos recorded by the passengers during the capsizing have been recovered. Some recorded the announcements telling passengers to stay put and put on life jackets, while some showed passengers joking around and putting on life jackets or sending their farewells to their family members. Passengers made calls, sent text messages. during the capsizing. The last messages that were sent around the time of 10:17 a.m. Text messages and social media posts allegedly made by survivors still trapped in the capsizing boats circulated in the media. But an investigation by the Cyber Terror Response Center found that none of the trapped passengers used their phones between noon of that day and 10 a.m. of April 17th. Those who reported to see messages after this time were found to be falsified. And during this, I have text messages from the passengers on board. And I do this to remind people that these are humans, these are kids, sending their farewells to their families, because I want to humanize those who have died. A text message sent as the ship was starting to go down was a boy messaging his mother, "Mom, I'm sending you this now because I'm afraid I might not get to say it later. I love you." His mother responded 7 minutes later by saying, "Why? I was wondering why you weren't checking messages." Fortunately for the student, he has been reported to be rescued and was reunited with his family. Unfortunately, that cannot be said for others. This is a father and his daughter messaging one another, where he writes to her, "I know the rescue is going on, but try coming out if possible." His daughter's final message to him was, "Dad, I cannot walk. The hallways are packed with kids, and it is too tilted." That passenger was later found to be dead. Between some teachers and the students communicating during the accident, a teacher asks, "Are all of you all right? Are you wearing your life vests?" Where the students ask the same question to their teachers. Teacher responds, "Kids, do not move and stay put. Wear your vest if you can." About 15 minutes later, a student writes, "I love all of you. Let's meet again alive." As far as I am aware, none of them made it out alive. These are text messages between a passenger and his brother, where the brother says, "Data isn't working. I heard the Coast Guard just came through, though." His brother responds, "Yes, the rescue team will get there soon. Stay calm and don't panic. Take your time. Just act as fast as they do. When your data works again, please contact me." The current state for this passenger is unknown. This is taking place between a student messaging his theater club, saying, "I love our theater club. I love you all. I really do. And seriously, if I have wronged any of you, forgive me. I love you." Those are text messages sent by students in their final moments, worried about their families and with full confidence that they're going to make it out of this alive. And unfortunately, only 75 of them did. Most of them, to this day, remained dead or missing. A bit of another fact to tell you how desperate a lot of the passengers were to escape at the time, whenever they realized that the ship was starting to capsize faster, was a bit of a disturbing fact. It does mention the remains of the people on board, but it was shown that a majority of them had their fingers broken. It was later found that a majority of them had them broken in an attempt to escape the ship. And that shows how desperate these people really were to live and escape this accident, and kind of brings a little bit more terror into the situation that they tried to escape and couldn't at this point. Heading on to later in the morning, this is talking about the rescue operations that were done to try and save as many people as possible, which in the end caused some casualties of rescue team members. On the first day at 8:58 a.m. on April 16th, 2014, the Mokpo Coast Guard dispatched Patrol Vessel 123, as stated earlier, in response to the first report of the incident. After receiving the news, the capsizing from the Jeollanam Province government, the Republic of Korea Navy Third Fleet sent a Gumdokso class patrol vessel, or the PKG, which is referred to from here on out, to the accident site at 9:03. The Navy dispatched another PKG at 9:09 a.m. At 9:04 a.m., the government created the Central Disaster Countermeasure Headquarters, an organization that would directly report to the government. The KCG, a reminder, Korean Coast Guard, set up a rescue operation headquarters at 9:10 a.m. Patrol Vessel 123 arrived at the scene near 9:30 a.m. as the first ship to reach the site after the incident. During the time between the dispatch and the operations, 123 failed to raise the Sewol and chose to call for other ships on the radio. Consequently, crew members on 123 had not directly communicated with the sinking ship, and were not aware of the content of the communication between the Sewol and the Jindo VTS on arrival. At the time of the arrival, the Sewol had listed about 50 to 60 degrees to port. Rescuers made announcements for 5 minutes, calling people to abandon the ship and jump into the water. Number 123 began rescue operations at 9:38 a.m. With the dispatching of a rubber boat. Passengers who had reached the deck or jumped into the water were rescued, including Captain Lee, but rescuers could not get inside the ship due to the list, which was again the ship tilting. People trapped inside the Sewol's porthole were rescued by breaking through the windows at 2:24 p.m., which is way later. 150 Special Force personnel from the Republic of Korea Army Special Warfare commanded, including 40 scuba divers, were sent into the operation. At this point, 196 personnel, including 82 in the SSU and 114 in the Republic of Korean Navy Special Warfare, were involved in the operations. So the rescue boat 123 was ordering passengers to jump and come out. However, they were not aware that inside the ship, the passengers were being told to stay put. So, and because the way the ship was tilted, they could not go in and were unable to send divers in until about 2:42 p.m. And at this point, the ship had completely capsized, which it did so at about noon. At 3:07, the regional government of Gyeonggi Province had reported to have started operating the Prevention and Countermeasure Headquarters. After 5 p.m., units from the SSU began undersea operations, and at 5:13 p.m., the Gyeonggi Do Office of Education was reporting to have started operating the Asan Danwon High School accident countermeasures report, compiling what was going on at the time. At 8 p.m. At night, operations investigating the ship's hull were ceased because it was getting too dark. Operations, however, continued on the second day, starting on April 17th. Undyne Marine Industries, a privately held company, began to lead the search for missing passengers at 12:30 a.m. on April 17th. Hull investigations were started by the KCG with the help of flares. As of 6 a.m., 171 ships, 29 aircrafts, and 30 divers were involved in the rescue effort. The KCG had assigned 20 divers in two teams, The Republic of Korea Navy also assigned 8 divers, but the KCG prevented them from participating and waited for divers from the Undyne Industries to show up. At 7:24 a.m., civilian groups of expert divers were reported to be helping out in the rescue operations. During the morning, the number of divers involved in the operation reached 555. The Navy also established a military control tower on the Dokdo class assault ship, starting at around 2 p.m. Rescue operations were practically stopped due to bad weather conditions. A marine crane arrived at the scene at night, and it continued on to a third day at 10:50 a.m. on April 18th. At this time, the KCG began pumping in air to support possible air pockets. So what they were believing is that if there were any survivors, they had found air pockets, which would have happened at the bottom of the ship, which was now facing towards the sky at this point. So they were hoping that if they pumped air, it would have supported these air pockets, helping to the a higher survival rate, which is not out of the question. This was actually would have been a very smart move. However, most of the students were and passengers were in the upper most deck of the ship, which would have been the fourth and fifth floor, I believe, or third and fourth floor, which would have been the absolute top of the ship, which would have been very unlikely for them to make it to the bottom of the ship. However, supporting air pockets would have been a good idea. At the same time, divers entered the capsized ship's hull, but only gained access at the cargo deck. The divers' entrance was later labeled a failure by the Central Disaster Countermeasures Headquarters. So, due to the fact there was a failure on the 18th, they continued on for another day on the 19th of April. A Navy officer who was injured during the rescue operations had actually died. On April 21st, remotely operated underwater vehicles began were used during the operations, and on April 24th, the CR-20, also called the Crabster, robot, was sent in to the rescue site. So this is where some of the rescue crew actually added to the casualty list. An Undyne Marine diver died on May 6th, following another diver's death on May 30th, and on July 17th, a firefighter helicopter returning from rescue operations crashed near an apartment complex, killing 5 of the officers on board and injuring a high school student. About a year later, the government announced on April 22nd of 2015 that it had approved plans to salvage the wreckage of the Sewol in hopes that they would find more information about the sinking and would recover more bodies. At this time, the 9 victims that were still missing. The plan was initially put forward by President Park Geun-hye and endorsed by the Minister of Public Safety and Security, Park In-young. The operation was expected to take as long as 18 months and to cost about, in US dollars, $91 to $137 million. This is the survivors and casualties. Here, numbers are about to jump around a lot. This is referring to April 16th, the day of the accident, because I know during the last segment talking about rescue operations, it jumped around a bit. But this is talking solely about the day of the accident. Numbers are going to jump around a bit because this is going to be talking about how different news stations reported on the incident. And it's going to get very confusing. However, I will try to make it as easy as possible to understand. So bear with me a little bit. At 11:01 a.m., Mon Hua Broadcasting Corporation began to report that all students had been rescued. This news was re-reported by other news organizations and continued until 11:26 a.m. Around 11 a.m., KST, Korean Standard Time, officers working for the educational departments of the Gyeonggi Province sent text messages to the students' parents stating that all students had been rescued. The officer's belief was apparently confirmed by police officers in the Danwon Police Department. Initial reports stated that rescuers retrieved 338 people from the cold water, as the passengers, mostly students, had corrected. Mostly students had jumped overboard when the vessel started sinking. The South Korean government later corrected the statement by saying 295 passengers remained missing. 22 of the 29 crew members survived, including 15 responsible for navigation. And it's April 17th, morning edition, the Chosun Ilbo reported that 174 people had been rescued, 4 had died, and 284 remained missing. Which, all of these numbers are off. All of these numbers are horribly off, and I feel sending a message out to parents that all students had been rescued when it was clearly not true feels like a cruel joke. But once again, I digress. According to CNN and its affiliate, YTN, 6 people died, which is not true. Newsul Korea reported that as of 8 a.m., 179 people had been rescued. 6 had died and 209 remained missing. 3 more people were found dead at 11 a.m., and confirmed death toll to rise to 9. At 10 a.m., Yonhap confirmed that the death toll had risen to 14. Over the course of the following months, the death toll rose into the hundreds. The death toll stood at 294 as of July 22nd, 2014, with 10 missing. The date marks the recovery of the last cabin crew member. The sinking of the Sewol is the deadliest ferry disaster in South Korea since December 14th, 1970, when the sinking of the ferry Naemyung killed 326 out of its 338 people aboard. To remind you, all of these numbers are off. As of today, only 172 survived. The rest were killed. 5 are still missing. So 304 are dead, 250 of them being high school students and staff. So all these news stations grossly misinterpreted the numbers, which is a whole nother issue in and of itself. And that's one of the big problems with this case is how governments handled the situation, how the news stations handled the situation, how the regulations and licensing companies failed the people on board. It is a giant mess to deal with. But it's holding people accountable for the actions that they caused, and that's what's most important here. This will be the second to last segment I want to talk about, which is the charges that were brought upon the crew of the Sewol, which is, you know, I think the appropriate measures. On April 19th, Captain Lee Jeon-suk was arrested on suspicion of negligence of duty, violation of maritime law, and other infringements. Lee had abandoned the Sewol with passengers still aboard the ferry, while South Korean law explicitly requires captains to remain on the ship during a disaster. 2 other crew members, a helmsman and a third mate, were also arrested on that day on suspicion of negligence and manslaughter. By April 26, 12 further arrests had been made, with the whole crew responsible for the navigation in detention. On May 15th, Captain Lee, First Mate Kang Won-sik, and Second Mate Kim Yong-ho, and Chief Engineer Park Gi-ho were indicted on charges of homicide through gross negligence, which would carry a potential death sentence in Korea. The other 11 crew members faced lesser charges of abandoning the ship with and ship safety offenses. 3 crew members, Park Gi-young, Gi-hyun, and Kim Ki-woong, were credited by survivors with saying for staying aboard the ferry to help passengers escape. All 3, unfortunately, went down with the vessel. On May 8th, the chief executive of Chiang Hae-jin, Kim Hon-sik, was arrested and faced charges including death by negligence. Four other Chiang Hae-jin officials were also taken into custody. The Ministry of Oceans and Fisheries revoked the company's license to operate ferries on the Incheon-Jeju Island route in May 2014. Yoo Byung-in, a former chairman of Chiang Hae-jin, ignored Incheon District Prosecutor Office summons and went into hiding. On May 22nd, the Incheon District Court issued an arrest warrant, and Korean authorities offered 50 million won, or in USD, $48,000 for information leading to the arrest of Yoo. On May 25th, the reward was raised tenfold to 500 million won, or in USD, $488,000. On July 21st of 2014, it was reported that a body found the previous month in a field located 258 miles south of Seoul was believed to be Yoo's. So it was believed that that chairman is now dead. And lastly, talking about the salvage of the wreckage, which happened on March 22nd, 2017. The salvage operation began to raise the wreck of the Sewol, a Chinese consortium. Shanghai Salvage Company was contracted by the government to carry out this operation. The ship was lying on its port side, nearly 14 meters below the surface. Diesel and oil were drained from the ship. All the cabins were sealed with huge fences, which were erected on the seabed. This was to prevent any wreckage from drifting away or any bodies from drifting away. A crane lifted the bow of the ship 5 degrees so that 33 lifting beams could be placed underneath. The salvage crew pumped air into the ship's ballast tank, basalt tank, and attached airbags to increase the ship's buoyancy. Cables were attached to the lifting beams and were sent to gradually lift the ship to 13 meters above the surface, where it was then attached to a barge. The Sewol had been towed and loaded into a semi submersible vessel dockwise. The ship was loaded onto a self-propelled modular transporter, or SPMTs. While the vessel had been transported to shore, the vessel docked at Mokpo, where it was unloaded at the time of the raising. 9 passengers were still unaccounted for. During this retrieval and salvage, the last few passengers who were missing were retrieved, including the remains of teacher Go Chang Suk, was found in the sink at the sinking site. After the ship's removal, the following remains were then found: Danwon High School student Hyo Danyun, Cho Yu Hua, and passenger Lee Yong-suk inside the ship. For most victims at this point, only partial remains were retrieved and DNA tested to identify them. By the end of the search operations on October 19th of 2018, 5 victims to this day still remain missing. The remains of Danwon High School student Nam Hyun-cho, 16, Park Yo-in, 16, teacher Yang Seung-jin, 57, and father and son passengers Kwon Jae-hyun, 48, and Kwon Hyuk-gyo, 6 years old. And that is the end that I have for all of the information, but not the end of the episode yet. To end up this podcast, I want to give a few words from the parents from the accident. and how they are feeling years after the incident took place, in a sense to remind you that these are parents who lost their young children to an accident that never should have happened. From one mother, Lee Haya Kyung. My son's body was discovered on May 1st. How could I even say a word in front of such deep sorrow? I don't have any passion for my life. I raised him with all of my heart. Wherever you are, thank you for the life you spent with me. Mother Shin Jom-ja, talking about her departed son. Before the accident, my family talked a lot. Now we save our words, trying not to hurt each other. I'm eager to see you once again, and I wish I could hug you. A statement from Mother Ahan Myang-mi in response to her daughter. My perspective and my country has changed. I thought my country was good. I prayed for it. However, after this disaster, I cannot pray for a while. Mother Kim Yoo-jung, in reference to her daughter. I wish our country could make us feel like it was protecting us. I want to tell Hai Young's younger sister about how proud I am of my country, but I cannot these days. We as adults have a duty to protect our children. From Mother Kim Yeon-sil, when talking about her son. I feel so sorry for Cha Woong, and I miss him so much. These children who stayed calm in the ferry at the last moment and worried for us are better than us. I don't have confidence in my country anymore, and I want to move abroad if my oldest child feels okay with it. Mother Lee Sun-mi, when referring to her daughter, says, Spring has come and flowers are blooming, but mothers cannot smile. I hope the children who are still missing will be found. I wish I could bring back my daughter. The world after this tragedy is not the place that I had known. Mother Kim Mi-hwa, when referring to her son, As I see the children, they are all pretty and precious. All of them have a right to be loved and have dreams. Losing my kids is the tremendous loss of our country. From Mother Kim Yong-lee says, A thorough investigation is needed and wrongdoers should be punished. This kind of accident might happen again if we don't know why it happened. From Mother Jung Ba-ja, I was protesting, asking for an inquiry to find out the real reason why the ferry capsized. Some foreign tourists took photos of me. At that moment, I felt I was an alien, although I lived in this country. All I wanted to know is the reason as to why the crewmen were rescued, but our children had to die. From Mother Jung Hae-suk, Our children didn't blame society. They tried hard to save each other's lives and worried for their families. Don't we have to learn from the efforts they showed in the last minutes of their lives? Mother Yom Ji Ying, when referring to her daughter, Every relic of our children is still there. I'd like to find them. I'd also like to know the truth and the reason as to why they were ordered to not escape the ferry. And lastly, from Mother Park Yeon-mi, when talking about her daughter, I will never give up until I find her. For a year, every day is like that day on April 16th. The times I laughed about trivial things have now become precious moments. I thought living an ordinary life was the easiest thing, but I've realized it is the hardest. I say these things not to sadden you, but to remind you that there is real pain in accidents like this, and taking them with a grain of salt is not the right thing to do. Bringing attention to these and the mistakes that have happened is the only way we can prevent them from happening again, and bringing real names and families and feelings to the people who have sadly departed from us. The accident brought a lot of love from other countries, including the neighboring North Korea, who sent their condolences to the government and the families involved. On a day like this year, will be the seventh year in a row to which these students have sadly not been able to return home. On this year, make sure to give a small moment of silence to remember all of those who have departed, and remember that things like this can be avoided. We just have to take initiative to make sure they never happen again. Thank you.